You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 19 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're chatting with Petli Rodenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors, talking some of the charts for the week ahead. We've got Renergen results, and the Greenfields helium and liquid natural gas producers. We'll be chatting with their CEO. And Henry Biddlecombe from Anchor on the antitrust report that came out of Congress around Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: PPC critical audit report unprecedented. And from CNBC, China says its economy grew 4.9% year on year in the third quarter. Morning markets, US markets were mixed. S&P was up 0.01%, so only just. NASDAQ off 0.4%. Asia is green, with Sydney up 0.9% and Turkey up 1%. Commodities red, gold $1,903 an ounce, rand 1653 against the US dollar. And our top 40 opening call for a red open, but literally a tenth of a percent down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petli Rodenhuis. He's founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Petli, morning. Appreciate your time. You put out your weekly game plan every Sunday afternoon. Yesterday, if we take the US indices, S&P 500, NASDAQ, not a lot happening. But if anything, I suppose, certainly a bullish underlying bias and probably some new highs coming, if not this week, perhaps next.
Yeah, good morning. And yeah, I think a couple of weeks ago, we saw, about 2-3 weeks ago, I guess, we saw this little immediate downtrend that the S&P 500 and most of the major US indices have been making had broken. Mm-hmm. And that had now sort of resolved itself by trading a bit higher. The expectation was actually for the market to go on to make a new all-time high. And then last week, we started off really, really strong, but it ended up relatively weak. So it's a bit concerning in the sense that we didn't go on to, the market had sort of turned around and softened a bit. So that had made a lower high, which is a bit concerning. So I guess we'll have to watch this week to see whether or not, you know, which direction the market goes. So for this particular week, the view is almost like, look, yes, there is still this sort of bullish undertone to drive markets, but there is the possibility that the U.S. market does pull back. Actually, if you look at the S&P 500, it might come back to test the previous all-time high. So this was the high that it made sort of mid to late February before this whole coronavirus business derailed sort of the world economy. If we see that level being retested, that's about 3,400 or 3,400 on the index, on the S&P 500 level, or on the S&P 500. If that index level is sort of retested and held and we bounce bullishly off that, then, that game plan is back on. We're looking for new highs. That said, let's put the disclaimer in that the U.S. election comes ever nearer.
Yeah.
And as that approaches, volatility is likely to increase, and the outcome of the election, whether it's contested or either candidate wins or loses, I'm not 100% sure exactly what this is going to do to the market. Ultimately, it's unpredictable and pretty much going to be relatively, volatile. I think that, the general feeling is that if Trump loses, which may or may not be good for humanity, it might be bad for financial markets. There are a lot of businesses baked into rolling back regulations and making it easier to do business. And that's one thing that he has done. And unfortunately, I think if Trump does lose or if he's contested election, that we might see the market soften up a bit, and then this dream of a new all-time high of mine might evaporate very quickly, right?
Yeah, and certainly, as you say, we're 2 weeks and a day away from the election, but it's going to be a messy election. We, not only who wins, but when do we get a result? Do they accept it? All of those sort of questions. Local stock, Aspen. When I speak to the fundamental investors, they all shake their head and say the stock is incredibly cheap. When you're looking at the chart and you're saying, $100 looks like it's going to come into play for this trade.
Yeah, I think we spoke about Aspen in July.
Yeah.
That far long ago. They were, it was actually one of the first times I chatted with you on this on this morning show. It's actually sort of playing out that same formation still then, or from then till now, right? So it's a very large channel that it's trading in. It's a sort of upward sloping channel. It's been moving sort of down over the last couple of months now. It had consolidated for the last 2 to 3 weeks. That consolidation broke down last week, and now, you know, we're targeting that 100 Rand level. 100 Rand, 101 Rand around there, which is about 10% down from here for the stock price. And then that's the sort of target reach, right? So it's showing you how long sometimes it's trades back to work out. It's a couple of months, right? From a fundamental level, I probably agree with most of the sort of fundamentalists, if you will. There are signs of value, particularly in our market. But, you know, sometimes the trend overrules logic for some time. But for now, yeah, just as though the stock sort of broke out of this little rectangular consolidation as it's been moving down since the onset of September, really, into its consolidation, where it consolidated for 3 weeks or 2 to 3 weeks, sort of late September into early October. And now that consolidation broke last week. So bombs away for 100 bucks.
Yeah, and I take your point. I mean, the fundamentals are one thing, but right now that trend is down, and it has planned. It was July when we chatted. The stock was around 145, and it's just been slowly, slowly, slowly edging its way down. Not in a straight line, but certainly the trend has gone there. And as you said, now we're at 110, and 100 looks very possible. Bakley Rodenhuis, founder here in your Capital Advisors, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Stefano Marani. He is CEO of Renergen. They had results out for 6 months ending August, coming out on Friday afternoon. Not dismissing the results, but they're a greenfield miner. It's really, the results don't tell us very much. Stefano, morning. Appreciate your time. The two major components, helium and liquefied natural gas. We've chatted a bit on LNG with your Total time up a couple of months back. Helium in of itself, but I want to run down this rabbit hole. I mean, certainly it is a very rare product. There are only 8 countries that are producing it. There's an amazing story, which one day we'll run down in terms of strategic stockpiles in the US, but there certainly is a demand for what is a very rare commodity.
Good morning to you and your listeners. Yes, helium is incredibly rare, and it's because it's got all of these fantastically wonderful properties to it, which means that there's no substitute. And aside from the obvious being children's body balloons, it's got all of these other applications, space exploration. You can't get a CAT scan or an MRI without one.
Yeah.
There's all of these other things. One fun little fact for you, the listeners, is the recent SpaceX launch used the same amount of helium as about 2 million party balloons.
Yeah, well, that was in some senses a giant-sized party, I suppose. You've got your deposit in the free state. I mean, these sort of timelines to productions, they take an age. They require capital. My sense is going through, you've got capital. What sort of timeline before you are starting to produce? Is that still a number of years off?
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. So as we've been saying all along, we're going into production during 2021. Obviously, with COVID, we would have, we're anticipating that there was a little bit of a delay. So we've reset our timelines to around third quarter of 2021. But we've been telling the market this for the last 6 months since the initial lockdown started. But it's not too long to go before we go into first production. And first production will see us supply the equivalent amount of LNG to run, let's call it, between 500 and 600 trucks. But from a helium perspective, it'll probably do about 150% of South Africa's demands, which means that our little baby project, what we call the baby project, will secure South African helium requirements yeah, indefinitely, as long as the plant is producing.
And you say baby project, because of course that ramps up. So, I mean, you know, you'll be supplying South Africa and then, you know, obviously the rest of the world. I mean, this becomes an important export, not just for Renogen, but for our economy, where we have a very finite, a very rare resource, which planet Earth is needing. And there haven't been, you know, massive sort of greenfield projects around helium in a long time.
No, and you're absolutely right. What we call phase two is where the project starts to take on an entirely different meaning, both for the company and the country. So we're in the throes of busy drilling and exploring and tightening up our understanding, as well as doing the initial engineering on phase two. We believe at this stage that we should be able to get phase two operational in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we will be one of the world's major helium suppliers. It'll be in the order of magnitude of tons per day, as opposed to hundreds of kilos per day. Also, from an LNG perspective, it'll be quite a significant volume that's coming online, which is why during this half we announced an LNG auction, and that was to basically signal to the market that, you know, phase two is coming. We're busy working, and if anyone wants allocations of LNG, then sign up for it now.
Yeah, so that's your liquefied natural gas. I mean, as I said, we chatted about your tie-up with Total, and that's to get sort of move trucks, transportation, onto liquefied natural gas. It's cleaner. It's just in all levels, it is better. But you'll also be doing those auctions, which will then put it out into industry for whatever their demands and needs potentially are.
Absolutely. You know, it's a cleaner alternative to LPG. And if you're on coal, then, you know, those days are numbered from an ESG perspective. So, you know, there is this transition, and natural gas makes the most logical sense, because heating with gas is way cheaper than electricity.
Yeah, and you have been focusing on the transportation sector. As I said, the auction will shift that. But truthfully, there's residential, there's the heating, there's power, there's obviously industry. This is the green trend towards renewable. Certainly, liquid natural gas absolutely is going to be at the heart of that renewable energy.
True, and, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about carbon footprint and renewables. Yeah, it's the renewable technology, as impressive as it is, in and of itself still needs a little bit of a way to go. And, you know, to put this in context, if you had to power a vehicle on LNG, mm-hmm. versus powering an electric vehicle running on batteries, and the batteries were made from coal-fired power stations, and the car was charged with electricity produced by a coal-fired power station,
mm-hmm.
then LNG produces about the half of the carbon footprint that an EV would cradle to grave.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what we always forget. Electric vehicles are green, except where do they get that electricity from? And if it's coming from a coal-fired power station, it is not green by any stretch.
Correct.
Stefano Marani, CEO of Renogen, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Henry Brocombe. He's portfolio manager, Anchor Capital, also known as our tech guru in some senses. We chat to him a fair bunch about the sort of the heavyweight tech stocks. Henry, morning. Appreciate your time. The Congress, U.S. Congress, the antitrust report came out earlier in October, focusing on Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. And the key line I took, and it's a 450-page report, the investigation revealed an alarming pattern of business practices that degrade competition and stifle innovation. As investors into these big tech stocks, should there be high levels of concern, low levels of concern?
Hi, Simon. Yeah, so if you weren't going to mention those two words, I certainly was going to. It's very interesting language, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I also thought it was interesting that they compare these tech companies to the sort of oil barons and railroad tycoons that initially rose up when America first industrialized. And it's kind of difficult to argue with the report.
Mm-hmm.
Do those qualities make these bad investments? Well, to the contrary, I think over the last decade, they've made them exceptionally good investments. But I suppose it is something that needs to be addressed, and it looks like it's going to be addressed quite seriously through legislation over the next 12 months.
And that timeline to me seems, I mean, I remember the Microsoft investigation, and that seemed to have gone on. I mean, it literally did. It was over a decade. And, you know, this was around Internet Explorer being bundled with Windows. And by the time the DOJ got to a resolution, the world had moved on. I mean, we had, you know, Mozilla, we had a Chrome was just around the corner. You think that the timelines here could actually be a lot quicker?
Yeah, and I suppose you could also argue, Simon, that some of the transgressions are, relative to the Microsoft situation, a lot more egregious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, possibly the best example is what Amazon do in their marketplace. You know, it's the fastest growing part of their business, mm-hmm. Where they facilitate sales for third-party merchants. But as soon as they spot a successful product in that environment, basically what they do is they introduce their own version of it in their own store at a lower price. And they kill off that competition. So, you know, it's less than desirable behavior and something does need to be done about it.
But aren't these, I mean, on this Amazon one, so those third-party products, I mean, yeah, someone said to me during the week, aren't these just the no-name brand milk you can buy at Pick and Pay? And yes, but no, but maybe. In essence, what would probably happen here is they're going to say to Amazon, you need to stop making the third-party. Amazon will then spin that out, I would imagine, and shareholders would then receive that. And certainly there is some synergy, but it's not necessarily for the shareholder the end of the world. They're just going to potentially end up owning two different businesses?
Well, exactly. You know, this is a question that I get asked often. You know, is this enough of a concern to dissuade you from investing in the space? And my take on it is certainly not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ultimately, stronger regulation is probably better for the sector because when we go back to the language that they used in the beginning, degrading competition and stifling innovation is never good for the economy in the long term. But the other thing, you know, that I suppose one also needs to watch is that a lot of these issues are quite partisan.
Yes.
So while both the Republicans and the Democrats agree that something needs to be done, they don't both agree on what needs to be done. And certainly the most controversial aspect of the initial document is the breaking up of these companies into different operational silos. And I'm not so sure that finds its way into legislation easily.
Yeah, and their challenges, and you know, some of the simple ones. I mean, maybe you make Facebook disinvest from Instagram, and again, I see the synergies between the two. But I also say, as a Facebook shareholder, I don't mind having myself some Instagram shares on the side either. This is obviously, we're talking the US, we're talking Congress. The EU, of course, is also going to be looking into this. And this just all starts to get a little bit messier as perhaps the EU takes a different response as to how they want it to happen in Europe.
Yeah, the EU has always kind of moved a little bit more quickly than the US on anti-competitive stuff. And, you know, they're also going after these tech companies on the tax front.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's difficult to argue that that's probably necessary. What might become interesting is how these tech companies eventually deal with it. So, you know, a big company is very well equipped to navigate a complex regulatory environment. A small startup isn't. So you may have the unintended consequence that this might actually entrench those competitive moats that Amazon, Facebook, Google, and Apple ultimately have in the, you know, out there in the competitive environment.
Yeah, and that's been my thought, and just, you know, in part that these companies are so massive. I mean, you mentioned the oil barons and the railway barons of the early 1900s, which was the last time there was huge antitrust in Congress. These companies are so giant, so successful, that even with antitrust, ultimately, it doesn't significantly change the investment case for these businesses as an investor.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, I can't remember where I read it, but someone said at the end of the day, you just want to make sure that the best idea is rewarded rather than the biggest balance sheet being rewarded.
Okay.
And I thought that was actually quite a nice way to put it. So as long as that is the ultimate objective, this development's probably healthy. And, you know, it's not a unique situation where government has to play catch up with business. I mean, that's normally what happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that these businesses have been so successful over such a short period of time that this process of catching up is going to be quite a job.
Yeah, it is certainly going to be quite a job, but they are so big and so successful. This is certainly, it's going to harm them, but it's not going to be like a Standard Oil sort of scenario. We'll leave that there. That's Henry Biddlecombe. He is Portfolio Manager at Anchor Capital. Henry, appreciate the time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app. Podcast available from 7 a.m. Again, website, app, or wherever good podcasts are aggregated. Chat to us on the social media, hashtag MoneyWeb now. A huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.